Well, first, congestion charging, water metering and hiking the cost of parking are among a range of proposals set out by the Infrastructure Commission in its 30-year draft strategy released today. The strategy calls for an overhaul of the way the country's infrastructure is planned, prioritised and built. The Commission says years of underinvestment means there's a backlog of infrastructure that needs to be built and a significant gap between what we need and what we can afford. But it says as well as building new infrastructure, much better use needs to be made of what we already have. The report also proposes rigorous and transparent cost-benefit analyses on all major public infrastructure projects, reviewing local government's role in infrastructure, and the establishment of a leadership academy to raise capability in both the public and private sectors. The chair of the Infrastructure Commission is the former Reserve Bank Governor, Dr. Alan Bollard. He's in the studio. Dean Arkway, welcome, Alan.
Good morning, Catherine.
There are some really specific proposals here to do with pricing of transport, waste and water, as well as big picture stuff, institutional and governance. Who have you been talking to over the past year to prepare the strategy?
Well, we have been out quite a lot and we've gone around and talked to local authorities. They're quite concerned about what's happening at the moment and what powers they've got and what funding they've got. We've talked to the owners of the assets around New Zealand. And generally, there's quite a wide range. I mean, some of the market-based ones, like telecommunications, electricity, doing reasonably well. Others, like water operators, big problems. And then, in addition, we've put out a digital survey for New Zealanders. And what's come back from that has been some pretty strong messages about transport options are terribly important. They're worried about congestion. They're worried about public transport, worried about affordable housing, worried about fresh water, think there's too much waste around, and they want to prioritise environment. So some quite strong and competing arguments out there at the moment.
Well, you're there to crunch the big picture and crunch the numbers. How big, and I appreciate this doesn't have dollar signs on it at the moment, how big is the gap between what we need and what we can afford?
Well, I mean, that is a little bit complex because it does depend on how well we're using what we've already got. So our document that we're putting out today that everybody can go through, and we hope you all will, really says there's some stuff that we've got which is in good shape. There's some stuff we've got which could be where demand could be managed better so that not everybody wants to do their washing at the same time. Not everybody wants to use a bit of road at the same time. And there's various ways that that can be helped by things like congestion pricing. And indeed, one of the positive side effects of COVID has been a big increase in technologies that allow us to monitor use, track use, and say, well, users want it at peak times, they should pay for that, provided there's always options for people who can't afford that. So there's that, but there's new stuff as well. There have been various surveys done. They basically say we could have a gap of $20 billion or something like that, but that really depends on how we use what's there currently.
Just looking at the graph you've got, it looks like we've got about 25 to 30% of what it is currently perceived we need.
Well, that's a conceptual graph you're holding up in front of me, Catherine, but it's there
it's
to show there is a big gap.
There's a big gap.
And some of that is because of what's going to happen in the next 30 years out to 2050, and that's got to do with population, it's got to do with climate change, and it's got to do with technology as well.
So how much of that conceptual gap will need new construction of new things, and how much could be achieved by a radically more efficient and systematised use of what we've already got?
Yeah, a lot of new stuff or revamped stuff will be necessary.
Pipe replacements, just to be clear, we're not talking about fancy new bridges across Auckland Harbour necessarily. That might be in there, but a lot of this stuff is simply replacing pipes.
There's maintenance of stuff that hasn't been maintained, and quite often we find that's the stuff below the pavement that people don't see.
But that's still classed as new expenditure and new work.
Yeah, but, you know, spending on infrastructure, provided it's done properly, leads to an increase in your assets. So could it increase government debt or local government debt, but also increase their assets?
But your point is not all of the perceived infrastructure gap requires new buildings. Some does, but some could be achieved or will have to be achieved because we don't have the money by doing some existing things better. OK, let's have a look at the pricing and how that could change behaviour. You recommend congestion charging in Auckland to improve urban accessibility and to begin to plan for congestion charging in cities other than Auckland. The question is the public transport system good enough to be able to do this yet? In other words, if you want to change the behaviour, change how people are getting from A to B, do you have to get the cart before the horse or the modern tram or the electric bus before the horse?
Yeah, well, we're not actually recommending that. We're putting that up as a range of possibilities. Ministry of Transport put out quite a good report on that last year where they say, yeah, you could go a long way on that, provided there's alternatives for people who can't afford those and provided there's public transport. And, no, you can't just do one without the other. You do, these things all do connect. You do have to have the public transport possibilities as well. And for Auckland, that is a real big challenge because Auckland has got this huge growth. It's expecting continued huge growth, which, of course, the government will have to decide where they really think the population of New Zealand's going to go. And it's a pretty expensive place because it's a web of isthmuses that are quite hard to connect up.
But you warn about getting things done in the right order. Get the good public transport in place and then the other measures can happen. And I'm wondering if we are already seeing, for example, in three cities I can think of straight off the bat, councils getting rid of car parks in busy commercial districts and having pedestrian-only areas before they have the public infrastructure in place. And what is that going to mean for commercial districts and businesses in those commercial districts if you simply can't move the people?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of change going on in all of that, and actually COVID's going to add to some of that change because quite possibly there's going to be less demand for commercial property and retail property in CBD.
So it may convert to apartment living, though,
and
right?
It may, but that's often quite expensive to do that. But, yeah, absolutely. So councils have got quite big challenges working out where this is all going. And one of the things this report does, or the September report, which will be the 30-year strategy, will lay out much more clearly where the population pressures are, where people are likely to want to live, where they're going to need to work, which again is changing as a result of COVID, and what that means for things like transport, roading, parking, public transport, cycling, and the rest of it.
It's easy to do the easy thing, isn't it? And hard to do the harder thing, which is sort the public transport projects. We'll come back in a moment about how well councils and others are doing on delivery. We'll park that and come back to it. What are some of the other areas where you believe we could be doing things so much more efficiently? Water, waste, and how could we be doing them so much more efficiently?
Yeah, well, water particularly. I mean, when you look at New Zealand, you'd say, well, we've God-given a lot of resources. One of them is we have a lot of water compared to most places in the world. We have a lot of land, and we actually have a lot of soil, gravel, sand, and rock, which is all terribly important in construction and roading. And yet we've tied a lot of that up with red tape, and we've also fragmented the delivery of it. So with water, we're a small country, and we've decided that we should supply water infrastructure through almost 70 different entities. There's probably nowhere in the world that's tried to do that, and many of them are just too small to do that. So the government has already looked at that and said, well, they're looking at the possibility of aggregating, joining together a number of these water entities. And the data is unequivocal. It says you can get far more efficient and far better quality water from infrastructure that's managed at a larger scale than that fragmented system we've got now. Some of that applies to other areas of local authority work. But when you look at things like waste, that's a bit more difficult because there, technology's moved on. We're talking about coastal erosion. We've got problems with existing waste dumps already. And working out where that goes for the future
so
will be a big issue.
What do you propose for that? Because, again, we've got landfills, particularly in major cities, that are almost encroaching on living space. And we just do not seem to be getting any better at reducing or being more efficient with waste, whether it's recycling or whether it is far more sophisticated schemes for making use of waste to produce energy, for example. What gets in the way of that? Is it simply that it is not commercially viable? And if so, what do you do to make it so?
What gets in the way of it is that we have a population spread out over a very big country, a small population. A lot depends on whether you're really talking about things like landfill and incineration or whether you're talking about reuse or reconstitution, and those are only going to work if you can get good quantities of waste of good quality without a lot of alien stuff in between. And, of course, that's always been a problem. It's not just a problem for New Zealand. It's a problem in a whole lot of countries. The whole international transport of waste has changed over the last couple of years. So we'll need to keep working on that with packaging. I wouldn't necessarily be too pessimistic about that. There's already, you can see, packaging changing a lot, much less plastics, more organic stuff, more stuff that's easy to deal with, like cardboard. And we're, of course, with the circular economy, there's a lot of focus on where that all
goes.
But
what are you proposing? This is where you talk about price. There has to be a price that incentivises investment in what might be quite expensive plant, and price that disincentivises chucking stuff in the landfill.
Well, we have looked at this in the way that you charge for waste, and that can make a very big difference very quickly about the quality of waste, quantity of it, and where it goes and how it's reused. So you'll see from the Infrastructure Commission, Te Wahanga, shortly a report on waste in New Zealand, and that's going to have quite a number of useful data and ideas about how we could deal with this in the future, but it's got to be handled through packaging, through disposal, right through, and we all know it's very complex.
You're proposing, quote, rigorous and transparent cost-benefit analyses on all major public infrastructure projects to ensure value for money. Mm. I mean, surely this is happening now.
Well, it's meant to happen, but it doesn't always happen. And, of course, these projects, the big projects, are really complex. They're not just one thing where you say, let's build a road somewhere, let's do a cost-benefit analysis, now let's start. There's a whole heap of work that has to go on initially, surveying, looking at costing, looking at consenting, and all of those things. And any changes in those can change the whole cost structure of that. And that's often been the story of some of the bigger roads in New Zealand. But currently, government has a business case scenario where it is meant to do cost-benefit analyses in detail of these things. They're only partly done. I think the guidelines we've got are not bad, but then the discipline is not always there, partly because governments want to get on and do things, as New Zealanders are telling them to do.
We also saw this ridiculous case with Transmission Gully, and this was revealed by some recent Official Information Act documents, where it appeared a previous government did not even follow its own guidelines about where to set price for a tenderer. It was supposed to say, OK, how much would this cost if the public sector did it? And from that come to a figure that would be a ceiling for a private contractor. It then decided to go
it's not that simple. I mean, most of these big projects the public sector can't do. They're far more complex.
No. It was the price guide. That gives you a price guide as to where to set price. It then proceeded to put a ceiling below that official figure it was supposed to use on the basis that this would force inefficiencies. Yeah, it did was enforce cost blowouts and delays.
Well, I think part of the problem there is that in that particular project you're talking about, there are only one or two real tenderers, so you can't really expect to get competition in the normal way.
Didn't we do the same in the Christchurch rebuild again? Unrealistic initial tender prices and then constantly revisiting the cost underruns.
There has been some of that, and we're going through, these are set by procurement guidelines, and the question about how much you rely on lowest price and how much you rely on other quality and competitive issues. So we're going through doing new guidance on all of those, and we'd want to see those used right through government because they're not always.
Is this the same in the delivery of public transport? Again, the model that has been bequeathed to councils of late is basically take the cheapest tender and keep pushing the price down.
No, I mean, they should be looking at tender and whatever range of other quality considerations are there in the tender document. Just like you wouldn't go and buy the cheapest dress in a shop, you'd look at design and other features around it.
Well, if my guidelines were that I had to, I suppose I would.
Well, I don't think they're stuck to do that, provided they've specified the other requirements around it. But there has been some argument that we've paid too much attention to just lowest price. But on the other hand, you know, we want good tenders, and New Zealand's a pretty expensive place to get these things done.
You also refer to the need for all big projects to be properly stress-tested against all future eventualities. They've got to be stress-tested for climate adaptation, for emissions profiles, etc. Again, is that not happening now, or is it not coordinated now?
Well, some of it is happening, but, you know, some of these projects are very long life. They will last for 50 to 100 years, and it's... we haven't necessarily gone through the details of what climate change might mean in terms of water runoff or coastal erosion or some other features like that for 50, 100 years out. I mean, we can't entirely. And indeed, we're dealing with pipes under the ground that weren't engineered for the sort of conditions we've got now. But I think more and more you'll find that is happening.
Housing's the big issue, as you said, on many people's minds. What do you propose to improve housing supply? We are seeing more consents happening now, but we are so far behind. What do you propose?
Yeah, well, the bigger question about consents and about Resource Management Act and permissions to go ahead and do things, I do think we've got a problem in New Zealand because we're finding that a large proportion of projects is just going in lawyers' fees and planners' fees, not actually in getting on and doing construction work. And we're hopeful that the Resource Management Act reforms are going to take that into account.
It's already reducing the number of plans nationwide significantly.
Yeah, that is one thing, and that should also help on the housing side where there's a harmonised set of national guidelines rather than every council being different in every respect. We would also want to make sure that proper payment and allowance is done for all the associated infrastructure, so a new subdivision has got a lot of costs around piping and roading and parks and so on like that. There are now new mechanisms legally available for funding and financing those sort of things, and we'd like to see developers using those and local authorities using those.
You also want implementing regional spatial planning where all the infrastructure elements needed for our regions and cities are planned together and requiring for these plans to be funded. This gets back to who's making decisions and whether we've just got too many disconnected bits. Some of it in the service of local democracy, for sure, which is important in its own right. But are there just, again, if you're talking about a more coordinated overall infrastructure plan, are there just too many bits not properly talking to each other?
Well, there are a lot of bits in a small country like New Zealand. And look at, say, electricity reforms. A lot of electricity distribution companies, for example. That gives you a lot more data on who's doing well and who isn't, but it also means it's hard to get economies of scale and it's hard to connect them all up. For the most part, these things are connected technically okay, but we need to make sure that when we're looking at things like Auckland population increase, we're very aware of all the costs that are going to come as a result of that, some of which will be privately borne, some of them by the local authority and some by the country.
What do you propose for or envisage for local councils as part of saying, have we got the decision-making and the funding and the planning optimised for what we've got to do? What do you envisage?
Clearer national guidelines, ability to harmonise along those, a focus on not just complying with the regulations and allowing lawyers to earn a lot of fees and things like that, but whether we're actually getting delivery out of all of this. And in some cases, getting together to deliver things like water jointly, not one by one. One district's water shouldn't necessarily be any different, or water infrastructure doesn't need to be that different from another district's one.
So are you proposing a change to the current, and this is obviously being, focused on very strongly right now across local government. It's not just water that it is looking at a more centralised system. It is RMA, changes consenting, other things as well. Do you comment at all on whether the current local government structure and responsibilities is optimal?
Yes, we do, and we give advice to government and we give advice to local authorities as well. So we're an independent organisation. I mean, we're a Crown entity, but we're independent in our advice. And we've been giving advice all the way through the water reform process, for example, because that gets quite technical. How many water authorities do you really need or should you have in this sort of country? Similarly, on Resource Management Act, and in fact, I think those are the two biggest things that are on the policy books right at the minute that are going to make a difference for the next generation.
We have a deliverology unit now. Well, it's an implementation unit coming into the Prime Minister, Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. I'm curious as to why we need one. I'm curious as to you also talking about a major projects leadership academy to raise capability in both government and industry. We've had this conversation before. Have we lost capacity in certain specialties when it comes to very complex projects and delivery? Has something else got in the way of the ability to do that? Why are you proposing a leadership academy?
Well, we've got a construction sector that's always struggled to train its people, partly because when they do, the Australian recruiters come over, as they've been doing over the last couple of weeks, and lure them away to higher higher pay. So that's an ongoing sort of issue. Also, construction is getting more technical and more complex. If it's things like tunnelling, it is really world top technologies and you need world top people in. That's been another hard thing for the last year, but the government's already announced they're going to ease up on some of that. So we want to make sure that construction is a desirable occupation, that reskilling is out there, that construction education is going on in the best way. The centralised polytechnic system should be able to help in a lot of that. And something like an academy would be a way of just getting it up there and giving a career structure for people in New Zealand. Because it is very complex. I don't know that we've particularly lost our ability. The thing is getting more complicated, and we have a very small construction sector.
The recruiters are definitely sniffing around. You've also got the pipeline, which is separate, the forward pipeline, and this has been about everybody being able to see the big projects that are out there. How is it tracking?
No, it's yeah, it says there's a heap of work building up there.
Yeah.
So we've got something like nearly $60 billion of projects in the pipeline. So just to be clear, in this discussion document, we don't go into projects generally. No. We have those in a separate pipeline, and the separate pipeline are projects that are on the books that local authorities have got, developers have got, government has got, and a bit of private sector stuff as well, which we have said, well, is reasonably credible likelihood of these going ahead, but most of them aren't going to go ahead at the time they say because the construction sector is not big enough. It's in some respects a boom sector at the moment.
Thank you. Alan Bollard is the Infrastructure Commission Chair, and you can read this 30-year document that's out for public consultation on infrastructure for a better future. It's running from now till the 24th of June. You can make submissions through the Te Wangahanga website, the Infrastructure Commission's website at infrastructure.govt.nz/have your say. And it's on our website.